NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, you're listening to NITV Radio. I'm your host, Nari Pakai, and on today's program, we take a look at some of the performances that are taking to the stage at Melbourne's Fringe Festival. A conversation with Amelia O'Leary, dance artist and storyteller, talking about her upcoming dance performance, Namba. And NITV Radio speaks with Zach Rose, actor and co-creator of Ethnically Ambiguous, a comedy exploration into the acting industry. Also, an initiative in partnership with TAFE and New South Wales Fire Service to help young Indigenous people get into their dream jobs as firefighters. That and more coming up in today's program.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In today's headlines, a class action has been launched against the federal government alleging a former work for the Dole program in the Northern Territory racially discriminated against thousands of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in remote communities. A leading advocate has called for a rethink of how First Nations children are dealt with in the welfare system. And the family of a young child missing in rural South Australia has released a statement saying they're struggling to understand what has happened. That and more coming up in the news. Class action has been launched against the federal government alleging a former work for the Dole program in the Northern Territory racially discriminated against thousands of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in remote communities. Law firm Maurice Blackburn is running the class action, which is asking for compensation and an apology to those who were in the Community Development Program, CDP, in Menangrinda between July 2015 and May 2021. The class action alleges participants had to work more hours to receive their income support and under more onerous conditions than their urban counterparts, also doing work for the Dole. One of the plaintiffs, Senior Elder Baru Pasco, has told Principal Lawyer Miranda Nagy in a video published on the firm's website that the program created considerable distress and hardship.
Menangrinda has experienced a history of culturally inappropriate policies in the past. These policies have come from Canberra thinking, not our thinking. People didn't know what CDP is, how it looks like, what are the outcomes, the risks, the failures and things like that. People didn't understand in the broader community.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
A leading advocate has called for a rethink of how First Nations children are dealt with in the welfare system. Figures released by the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare indicates the number of Indigenous children in out-of-home care increased from 18,900 to 20,000 between 2020 and 2024. With just one-third leaving out-of-home care in 2023 to 24, reunified with family. Snake Chief Executive Catherine Little says the most common reason for children to come in contact with child protection systems is emotional abuse, which she says really means children are being removed because of the violence experienced by their mothers, aunties, and grandmothers. She says that reinforces the urgency of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander-led solutions to end family violence. If you or someone you know wants to talk about family or domestic violence, call 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732 or call Lifeline on 13 11 14. In emergency, call 000. And for culturally appropriate Indigenous support, call 13 YARN, a 24-hour national telephone helpline on 13 92 76, which provides support across a range of issues, including mental health. Australia's Public Health Association has voted to establish an Indigenous voice to guide the organisation's work. The association's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Vice President, Summer May Finley, says the voice would advise on how to better include Indigenous perspectives in public health agendas. The voice, known as the First Nations Collective, has been approved by the association's membership following a 2-year consultation process. The consultation was led by the association's former Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Vice President, Alana Gall, a Trawalwe woman who says it's almost unanimous acceptance made the hard work worth it. The family of a young child missing in rural South Australia has released a statement saying they are struggling to understand what has happened. The family's statement has been read by a family friend, Bill Harbison.
Gus's absence is felt in all of us, and we miss him more than words can express. Our hearts are aching and we are holding on to hope that he will be found and returned safely.
4-year-old August, known as Gus, disappeared from his family's sheep station in the remote South Australian mid-north on Saturday afternoon. The boy had been playing in the sand near the family home when he disappeared. A 5% deposit scheme for the first home buyers has taken effect from today, with the government arguing it will open up doors for families to finally enter the housing market. Housing Minister Claire O'Neill has told Channel 7 the scheme will go a long way toward remedying decades of government neglect of housing affordability, despite concerns the policy will only increase prices and that Labor has not done enough to address tax settings and construction issues that have been blamed for also inflating costs.
Really, this is about reshaping those home ownership opportunities that are being faced by the younger generation of Australians. For your kids and mine, Nat, they face really different housing opportunities than previous generations. The government wants to give a hand up to those young people today.
At the same time, separate figures have suggested home values have already been driven to yet more record highs. Property analytics firm Cotality says their monthly index has found prices across Australia have risen at the fastest pace in almost 2 years, shaped by a disconnect between housing supply and demand. Aged care advocates are hoping that new guidelines to track and improve treatment options for dementia patients in nursing homes will improve the lives of people suffering from such diseases. Dementia was recently named by Australian Institute of Health and Welfare as the leading cause of death for women and the second biggest killer of men after heart disease. Meanwhile, the UNSW Centre for Population Ageing Research has reported that those who speak languages other than English at home or who have poor English proficiency are at a higher risk of dementia in old age. Professor Tracy Commons from the University of Queensland, who helped develop the guidelines, says they can make a big impact.
So these were the outcomes that we found that we could actually measure straight away. So that's our recommendation that these things are the things that we should be looking at and measuring, because these are key outcomes that are important to people with dementia.
Queensland police are investigating what is being described as the sudden deaths of a woman and a young girl at a home in Brisbane's west. Police and emergency services were called to a property at Kenmore Hills for a welfare check around midday. On arriving, they found the bodies of a 54-year-old woman from Norman Park and an 8-year-old girl. Detectives say the two were known to each other and there is no ongoing threat to the public. They are appealing to anyone with information or relevant footage to come forward. For help, members of the public are encouraged to contact Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit www.lifeline.com.au or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36 or at www.beyondblue.org.au. Registered nurses will now be able to complete extra training to prescribe medications in a move aimed at relieving pressures on doctors, especially in remote areas. Nurses will be required to complete 3 years of clinical training and be endorsed by the Nursing and Midwifery Board in order to prescribe drugs. The Australian Medical Association, which represents doctors, has raised concerns that some nurses will have permission to prescribe addictive medicines like fentanyl and morphine, known as Schedule 8 controlled drugs. Dean of La Trobe Rural Health School, Professor Jane Mills, says that will depend on a nurse's area of experience.
And the prescribing will be based on their background as well, so the level of experience and expertise that they have in particular areas. So it's not quite so simple to say that there's just one list of medicines that registered nurses will be able to prescribe. It will depend on their scope of practice.
New South Wales government has been urged to overhaul police powers at music festivals after the court found a woman was humiliated and terrified during a strip search. Greens MP and drug law reform spokesperson Kate Fahreman says Premier Chris Minns must use the decision to end strip searches on the basis of drug possession and ban drug detection dogs at music events. The New South Wales Supreme Court has awarded $93,000 to Raya Meredith after finding police had no reasonable basis to use their strip search powers against her after she was sniffed at by a drug detection dog in Byron Bay. But class action lawyer William Zerno says the action by some 3,000 individuals strip searched between 2018 and 2022 remains unresolved.
This is the largest class action against any police force in Australian history. The egregious experience of the plaintiff was not an outlier and was experienced by thousands like her.
Scientists in the United States have successfully used computer modelling to recreate bushfire-induced thunderstorms for the first time. They are becoming increasingly common in Australia. The researchers from the Desert Research Institute in Nevada say their computer model will help predict storms' behaviours. Regarded as the most dangerous kind of thunderstorm, they're formed when intense heat from bushfire causes air to rise rapidly to extreme heights. The scientists say the storms are challenging for both firefighters and weather forecasters, so it's important to understand their formation. And now for sport, the NRL is considering returning to a daytime grand final, possibly from 2028. Sunday afternoon finals have proven a massive winner for the NRL this season, with ARL Commission Chairman Peter Verlandis confirming the three Sunday fixtures have each been the highest rating matches of the weekend. The chairman says no changes to grand finals being played at night would be made during the current broadcast deal, but could feature in talks for the next TV contract. The news is likely to be well received in rugby league circles, with former player Matthew Johns previously declaring on Fox Sports there is a strong case for change.
And they say, yeah, but it's eyeballs on screen. I've got no doubt that if you went to the broadcaster and said, listen, there's going to be more eyeballs on it, it's just the fact that people are going to sit around having barbecues and pubs and whatnot, you could sell it.
And at the para-athletics, James Turner has won Australia's first gold medal of the World Para-Athletics Championships in the 400-metre T36 in India's Delhi. It was a 12th global title for the Paralympic champion, who clocked a winning time of 52.18 seconds. T36 is a Paralympic athletics classification for standing athletes with coordination impairments affecting all four limbs and the trunk. Turner will return for the 100-metre T36 final on Friday, where he is also the world record holder and reigning Paralympic champion. And now for today in weather, Perth is seeing showers increasing at 18. Broome is mostly sunny at 32. Darwin is mostly sunny at 34. And Alice Springs is sunny at 30. Cairns is sunny at 32. And Brisbane is partly cloudy at 30. Sydney is sunny at 27. And Canberra is windy but mostly sunny at 17. Melbourne is seeing showers increasing at 18. Hobart, also showers at 18. Adelaide is seeing showers also increase at 18. And that wraps up the latest in news, sport and weather. You're listening to NITV Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. And oi, happy knockout to anyone in Tamworth right now. Also happening this week, Melbourne's Fringe Festival is kicking off October. I have a conversation with Amelia O'Leary, Gamilaroi woman, dance artist and storyteller, and she's talking about her upcoming dance performance, a story of emu sisters, Namba. I also have a chat with Zach Rose, one of the actors and co-creators of Ethnically Ambiguous, a comedic exploration into the acting industry. But up next, a story from across the country and in community. We look at an initiative in partnership between TAFE and New South Wales Fire Service to help young Indigenous people like Hannah and Michael get into their dream job as firefighters. Have a listen to this. A group of young First Nations men and women have blazed their way through a training program for firefighter hopefuls. The initiative is a partnership between TAFE and the New South Wales Fire Service to help young Indigenous people get into their dream job. NITV Radio reports. For 7 months, aspiring firefighters like Hannah Berman have been put through their paces. They've taken part in simulated emergencies, workshops and training that attempts to simulate what it's like to be a professional. For Hannah, it's of additional, personal and significance.
My uncle Danny Eastwood was actually the first known Indigenous firefighter, so it's very exciting in my family to hopefully take after him and make my family proud.
Since the course began in 2014, more than 80 Indigenous graduates have gone on to become firefighters in New South Wales and the Australian Capital Territory. The Indigenous participants come from a variety of backgrounds and are spurred on by a variety of motivations. Another aspiring firefighter, Michael Bolt, says he too has matters of the heart driving him towards his goal.
I lost my brother at the start of the year. And he was also someone that wanted to be a firefighter. So it's been hard going through a grieving process and also doing this program, but I'm doing it for him, for me and him, you know.
19 young people from across New South Wales graduated from the program this year. Called the Indigenous Fire and Rescue Employment Strategy, or IFERS, the pathway program is designed by Aboriginal staff from New South Wales Fire and Rescue and has strong focus on culturally safe and supportive learning. The program pairs students with an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander mentor. Michael says just as he is being mentored, so too does he want to be a mentor himself to future generations of people just like him.
I think firefighters are heroes, honestly. The work that they do, the dangerous work, they put their lives on the line every single day to serve that community and save lives. And I want to be a part of that team, make a difference. I want to be a role model for my family, my younger family that look up to me as well, and just a role model in general, you know.
Serving the community through connection to culture and identity. That story by Sunil Awasti and Cam Gooley. For SBS News and NITV, produced by Nari Pakai for NITV Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Up next, a conversation with Amelia O'Leary about her upcoming work in Melbourne's Fringe Festival, Namba. We talk about her storytelling, creative process, and the steps leading up to showing at Melbourne's Fringe Festival. Have a listen to this.
Music.
Yama, you're listening to NITV Radio. Today we have a yarn with Amelia O'Leary, a proud queer First Nations Gamilaroi Yinar dance artist and storyteller, sharing us about Namba for Melbourne's Fringe Festival. Thanks for joining us today, Amelia.
Hi, Yama. Thanks for having me today.
Can you introduce yourself to everyone? Who are you? Who's your mum? Where are you from?
So I am Amelia Jean O'Leary. I'm a proud Gamilaroi Yinar from Baraboo, Northern New South Wales, and I'm also a Wathaurong woman from Ballarat, Victoria, with Scottish and Irish ancestry.
So this story that we're going to see, Namba, it's told through characters of Jinawan, emus, and it's a story of sisters. What is this story about?
Namba is a beautiful duet between the emu sisters who come down to earth and they pave the creation of the land, and they go through the fire to become spirits, and their spirits go and travel to different generations of Yinars who they give strength and wisdom to.
The story, it's about emu sisters. Is that like a significant story to you?
Yeah, I think it is interesting to me because in my time on country, there's a story about one of the sisters being outcasted for being different, and she actually comes back for revenge. And that revenge overall teaches us that we need to accept the diverse Yinars and different people within our communities. So, yeah, the sisters, like, it's beautiful in the narrative of sisterhood, but it's also beautiful in the teaching of how different we can all be as different Yinars, as different sisters.
So this opportunity to come and be a part of Fringe Festival, it's huge. How has working towards this festival, getting ready, it's about to kick off soon. How do you feel in that creative process?
Yeah, I actually feel very excited, and we're literally putting the work together in 1 week. So it's been going like really fast, but it's like a complete like powerhouse of creativity and just completely going for it, and the dances are just like incredible, and it's just coming together so beautifully, even with the sound that I'm making as well. It's like it's being made at the same time, so it's very nuanced and connected. So yeah, I'm super excited to share this next week with everybody.
You're still working towards creating this. How is the collaboration process?
Yeah, the collaboration process is so beautiful, and we have Denny Cook, who's Māori, who's coming in as taking my place as a dancer as I'm busy, and it is just a beautiful way of sharing my cultural experience to somebody from a different culture, and to see my movement on her as well is like very beautiful and interesting in that cross-cultural sort of collaboration. And we also have Kia McGrady, who's a proud First Nations woman, and yeah, like, because she's Gomori as well, so we're both learning from each other in this process, and yeah, it's just beautiful. And because it is kind of quick, we're just like, it's coming from a very, like, beautiful, abstract and raw and authentic space, which I actually really value.
When audiences come to see this, what do they expect to see or feel when they see Namba?
Yeah, Namba is a journey. It has a little bit of humour in there, but it also is quite deep and kind of spiritual, but also kind of political. There's some statements in there, but it also is done in like a light-hearted way, as well as like having some sci-fi elements. So, you know, we're really going on a journey here, and I think it's an incredible, beautiful way of showing how diverse and interesting and beautiful First Nations dance and collaboration is.
This work of Namba, this isn't your first iteration of this. This is something that's changed over time. Can you tell us a little bit of how you develop a dance work?
Yeah, so Namba is actually made up of a few stories and a few other developments I've done, which is kind of different for me because I kind of just focus on one work and just dive deeper into that work. But in kind of making multiple works, I discovered how connected they are and how complicated actually my story is, and that that should be valued, that being who I am isn't supposed to be simplified or completely understandable. So it is a very authentic process of bringing together a work that was called Coded, which was in development for about 2 years, which was more about the sisters and the outcasting story, and particularly being a more queer narrative about that sister. And then Namba was actually originally a trio that I did in January that was about more about mother and earth and healing and love and family. And then I thought, actually, these stories are quite close together and they actually have beautiful ways of weaving together. So we've put them together, and it is it's very, very potent and beautiful way of, yeah, bringing together all these different movements and sounds into a very rich dance work.
And for listeners who want more information, or they want to get tickets or follow along your journey, where can they find you? Where can they get more information?
There is a Melbourne Fringe page, and within that page there is a Deadly Fringe page, which I'm part of, where you can find Namba. You can also just put in Google Namba Melbourne Fringe and that can come up. You can also follow me on Instagram, where I'm kind of, giving updates, showing some insight on it, which is just Amelia Jean. And like Amelia as in A-M-E-L-I-A with another A with a dot, and then J-E-A-N with another N. So you can check up on there. Also, we have an Australian Cultural Fund, which we're trying to get some donations, as the work is just a little bit underfunded, if you'd want to help out with that. But yeah, get your tickets. We open on Wednesday, the 1st of October, and we go until Saturday, the 4th of October at the Abbotsford Convent. It's a great work to bring friends and family as well, because it is such a rich and diverse and fun work. So, yeah, bring your fam along, yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on and having a chat with us today about Namba.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Love talking about it.
That was Amelia Jean O'Leary, dance artist and storyteller, talking about upcoming work to be in Melbourne's Fringe Festival, Namba. You can catch the performances from the 1st to the 4th of October. To get more information about Namba, you can find it on the Melbourne Fringe Festival website. You're listening to NITV Radio.
The conversation on radio, online, and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
The play Ethnically Ambiguous explores the lives of three actors who fight an uphill battle in an industry that's determined to pigeonhole them. Zach Rose is one of the actors in this play and co-creator of Ethnically Ambiguous. He shares how the play developed with his co-stars Max Nunes Caesar and Joe Malta, and the preparations that they're taking going into Melbourne's Fringe Festival. Have a listen to this chat that we have with Zach Rose. Yama, you're listening to NITV Radio. Ethnically Ambiguous joins the lineup in Melbourne Fringe Festival's programming for 2025. Today, one of the creators of the thought-provoking comedy joins us, Zach Rose. Thanks for jumping on and having a chat with us, Zach.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give us a little introduction to yourself? Who are you? Who's your mum? Where are you from?
My name is Zach Rose. That is not a stage name. That is my family name. Rose being on my dad's side. My people are the Gundijmara people down in Warrnambool, past Geelong. I've got some distant relatives. My distant relatives are famous boxer Lionel Rose, and my uncle is esteemed academic Professor Mark Rose.
Can you share with us what is ethnically ambiguous?
Ethnically ambiguous is a three-hander comedic play about three different actors with different cultural backgrounds. It's a balance of real-world cynicism and deeply human sincerity as they navigate the entertainment industry, which, as we know, is deeply flawed. We take on Rupert Murdoch in song. We rap about networking and how impersonal it can feel. We analyze the audition process and the racial biases and how they can affect it negatively. We also have this big ethnicity wheel. It's our gag, painted by our incomparable prop master, Donna Prince. It's like a wheel of fortune that we spin around, and it's got all of our ethnicities on it. It's a lot of fun.
When it comes to this play, what role do you play in Ethnically Ambiguous?
I am one of the three co-writers. I am a performer. I'm playing the character of Josh Bloom. I've also written all the music, so the aforementioned rap about networking and taking on Rupert Murdoch, I wrote all those songs. I am also a producer, or the producer, so I've been doing a lot of the boring admin.
The story of this play is from actors of diverse cultural backgrounds being cast into roles where accents and looks and stereotypes we've come to know don't really match authentically who the actors are. Does this concept come from experience in the industry for you three?
It absolutely does. The concept comes from all our experiences. Specifically for me, it comes from times where my heritage is accidentally disregarded and I get misrepresented as a white actor, which has happened on occasion.
In what ways does the play poke at these holes that are happening in the industry with the casting process, with the kind of characters they write for actors?
Well, there are some scenes in this play where we look at the audition process, and there's a character played by Max Nunes, Caesar, and he is auditioning for a show, without trying to spoil too much of the story. He's auditioning for a character, and he is going for a certain role. He ends up getting typecast as a stereotype, and that affects his views on the industry. Just kind of like, it makes everything seem sort of hopeless.
You just mentioned Max Nunes Caesar, one of your co-stars in the play. You also have Joe Malta. Can you share a little bit about your co-star, co-creators? Who are they?
Absolutely. Max Nunes Caesar, him and I were already great friends. We met doing some extras work on this tumultuous day at the beach. It was quite awful. But we realized we were both absolute nerds. And he introduced me to Joe when he was making his own short film of the same name, Ethnically Ambiguous, but a different story and completely different characters, but the same themes, racially charged themes. He introduced me to Joe Malta one day. We had coffee together. It was on a day I was very busy. I had a murder mystery fantasy-themed wedding to host. But they pitched me this idea for the play. I was encapsulated. We started coming up with character ideas. It was quite special. Jo, of course, she ended up directing the short film that Max wrote. All three of us actually star in that short film. It's currently in development, by the way, post-production and all that. But yeah, we formed a delicate bond. All three of us.
How was the collaboration process for you three putting your experiences together to feed the story that is Ethnically Ambiguous?
To be honest, it was difficult because we live so far away from each other. I live in the southeastern suburbs. They live out towards the city. And so we were communicating through Zoom calls. We were communicating through this group chat we have. But eventually, We started to see each other, travel out to each other, and we've been rehearsing. And I feel when we're together, it is magic. When we're there, we're bouncing ideas. We're truly making art. The photographer for our poster was David Vader. He's a fantastic photographer. Made a very nice poster of us, and also these lovely individual posters that we've been putting around that you'll find them around town. It was edited by Ella Harnish. She made the actual poster itself, editing the poster, making it look pretty and pink. It looks magnificent, what they've both done. We also have lots of people helping as we are directing the shows ourselves, all three of us. So we have consultants come in every so often for a rehearsal to make sure we're on track, make sure that the show that we're doing is the best it can possibly be. So we have this Sunday, actually, for our rehearsal, we have Sharmini Kumar coming in. She has directed shows in the past that I've been in. She directed last year's Around the World in 80 Days, the musical. So that was a lot of fun. We also have some of Joe's friends. I don't have their last name, but we have someone called Luna and someone called Vanessa. You might not want to use this. We're going to have them come in. They are going to have a look at us. We also have a reviewer. There's this person that is reviewing us, but they have this policy where they also want to interview you, which is a really cool concept. Their name is Holly Rowan, so that is something we are also doing.
Though that it's a small production and small crew, sounds like you've got a lot of different arms of support getting you through it.
Absolutely. It is. I did say before it is just the three of us, but yeah, it is dependent on all the people that are holding us up. Absolutely.
Joe and Max, they have actually previously spoken with the SBS team for SBS Spanish. How is it bringing these cross-cultural, ethnically ambiguous stories together?
We all have this shared experience of experiencing racism in the entertainment industry. And I feel like we're making people feel seen. This show is an authentic representation of actor culture, and there are actors of many nationalities out there. We show drama games, we show improv, we show the audition process, and we just hope that fellow creatives of all nationalities, genders, what have you, they can feel seen, and everyone else that isn't creative can feel moved and compelled by the story we've created.
For audiences who are coming to see this part of Melbourne Fringe Festival, what do you hope that they gain from the story?
We hope that people can see themselves in the characters that we have created. They are very, very, very loosely based on ourselves, emphasis on the very loosely, but they are representative of who we are. And I think people will see themselves in us because the characters we've created are relatable. And in the times that they're not based on our own stories, they're based on our friends or things that we've seen.
For listeners who want to get more information, they want to see this or follow along on what yous are doing creatively, where can they find more information?
Well, you can find us on the Fringe website, type in Ethnically Ambiguous. But we also have social media. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. My handle's @Zach_Rose_official. Max's is Maximum_Vanity. And Joe's is Joe Little Theatre. You can find us doing advertisements. Max is really good at that. Max makes some really great content. But yeah. That's where you can find us.
I want to thank you for coming on and telling us about Ethnically Ambiguous today, Zach.
Thank you for having me.
That was Zach Rose talking about the performance Ethnically Ambiguous in Melbourne Fringe Festival's programming. For more information, you can find ticketing and accessibility and more on Melbourne Fringe Festival's website. The play goes from the 15th to the 19th of October. You're listening to NITV Radio.